Anderson heaving one down the sideline, and he's got Cass Allen.
Listening to the Bruin Bible. This is your host, Will Decker, bringing you UCLA football content all throughout the year for LA Football Network.
What's up, Bruin Bible listeners? This is your host, Will Decker. We are brought to you today by the good people at BetOnline. It is the fastest and easiest way to wager on all your favorite sports contests and events with first-to-market odds and lines. Find reviews and news for every league, including Major League Baseball, NFL, NBA, NHL, combat sports, this is MMA and boxing, esports, and even golf. I'm going to be placing some big-time bets this year. NFL, we're talking about Rams-Chargers Super Bowl. That's my prediction. Going to be placing some future odds on that. MLB, I might be placing a bet on the Dodgers to make the World Series as well, given the year that they've had so far in the regular season. I'm going to be using it for all my MMA bets. Loving when a good fight's coming up. The Nate Diaz fight coming up this Saturday. Going to be putting a nice wager on that through BetOnline. Head on over to BetOnline today or use your mobile device to join today and make your first sports bet. Use our promo code BELIEVE50 to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts. What is up and welcome to another edition of the Bruin Bible. Will Decker, your host, a man who traveled all across Los Angeles yesterday, had the pleasure of joining us, the crosstown crossover himself, Mr. Madman. How are you doing, brother?
Doing well, brother. Great to be here at home. The Bruin Bible is my home, and happy to be here after an eventful Saturday. It's so awesome to be able to do both, but it was a long day. So happy to be back home and get some R&R, but so much to talk about this UCLA game, Will, and so excited to be doing this with you.
And for those that don't know, he actually covered the UCLA game in the morning at the Rose Bowl, got in his car, drove home. He lives in Westwood, showered up, changed into a different outfit, went to the USC game and covered that as well. So Madman, covering all bases for LA college football, what's there not to love? We had a game out there. And, you know, for UCLA, we tried to emphasize on the pregame pod that South Alabama was a team to really watch out for. This is a team that came in hot. They had a top 20 offense, a top 25 defense, and they showed in some areas that they can be a very competitive squad moving forward. Madman, give me your takeaways, from Saturday's performance, because there's a lot to talk about. It came down to the wire. It was a 32-31 victory. Last second field goal for UCLA gets it done, but give me your thoughts. It was a little bit weary, you know, from the UCLA faithful. We're not feeling motivated after a win like that.
Well, no question about it. And, you know, I think you and I had a really great discussion on the Bible before the game. And I think so much of what you and I talked about came to fruition, right? I mean, there was definitely some palpable concern about how South Alabama could play. And we wanted to be cognizant of that. And we were hoping that the Bruins would kind of come out with a mindset of saying, hey, this is a team that can give us some problems, and so let's see how we can respond. Unfortunately, Will, the team just didn't come out very inspired, and, you know, it was really a flat performance, I would say, for the first 20 minutes of the game, you know, and it started with that John Vaughn's great read on that bubble screen the very first drive. We got that pick and, you know, thinking, hey, we're going to punch this in for 7 and really sort of establish our role as the favorites in this game. Got held up to a field goal. And then South Alabama, the next 3 drives, Will, was just able to move the ball at will. Our front four that we've talked so much about these first few weeks could not get any semblance of quarterback pressure, not only throughout the game, but in particular in those next 3 drives. They were getting crushed on the edges, too. South Alabama was able to create edge containment that allowed their zone running game to have stretch plays. They could go bubble screen. They could go horizontal as well as vertical. And really, those next 3 consecutive drives was very methodical for South Alabama. They had 2 touchdowns and a field goal. And the only reason they had a field goal on one drive was really just an unforced drop that they had on second down, where their receiver would have had the ball at the 5-yard line. And so we were kind of sitting there at 17-6, really worried. The stadium was a little flat as well. And then I think a huge turning point was DTR finding Jake Bobo on that third and long. It was about 3rd and 9 on that drive right before the half. And, you know, finding Bobo just seemed to sort of unlock a dimension with this team. And then Bobo made such an acrobatic catch in the end zone for a touchdown. And then that first drive out of the second half was more Bobo, more Charbonnet. And we took the lead and it looked like we were going to really race out there. And then some inconsistencies on offense reared their ugly heads. And then it was ultimately a dogfight to the very end. So my big takeaways, Will, you know, really twofold. One is a lot of concern on the defensive side of the ball, both up front as well as in the secondary, because South Alabama had 400 yards of offense. They were able to run. They were able to throw, 0 sacks, very few quarterback pressures on the line. And our secondary was really getting moved around in some of these one-on-one matchups on the perimeter. So a lot of concern defensively. Offensively, I was very encouraged by the variety of playmakers that got involved. And so hearing Logan Loya's name and his huge impact in this game, especially on that first drive of the fourth quarter to cut that lead, and then Cam Brown making an appearance, and obviously Jake Bobo, we were waiting for a thriller. You called it in terms of a game ball for him, so that was huge. And then just seeing a little bit more variety there in terms of more playmakers getting the ball. So positive on offense, a little bit negative on defense. And so I'll stop there, and we can kind of keep going back and forth.
And Madman, it just came down to just mental mistakes and errors. Yeah. You know, we're at the goal line. Charbonnet fumbles the ball. Rare miscue from a guy like Zach Charbonnet. The swing on that from going up 7 to them getting the ball and them scoring on their next drive, massive. Literally kept them in the game. They had an 8-point lead going into the fourth quarter, due in large part to some of those mistakes. That 3rd and long where we get a 3rd down stop, but the late hit at the end of it, I'd have to go back and check out who that was. But that is just, you know, that is what coaches preach. Like, don't make mental mistakes out there. That is exactly what UCLA was doing. Keegan Jones had a fumble in the open field that, you know, was eventually recovered by South Alabama. It was just an ugly, ugly affair for a lot of it. And you mentioned the defense was not able to really generate pressure. How about 3rd downs in general? I mean, South Alabama was 9 of 13 on 3rd downs. That's a number that you usually look at for a winning team's, you know, product at the end of a game. So South Alabama was moving the ball. Got to give credit where it's due. We talked about LaDainian Webb on the pregame. Oh, yeah. This guy was a baller, man. 16 carries, 124 yards, touchdown. Had that 47-yard run on a 3rd and 7 in the second quarter that kind of, you know, put the fear into the Bruins' hearts a little bit, going, oh, the Jaguars, they're as good as advertised. You know, this team is making plays out there. Carter Bradley, who I did not know before the game, his dad is actually famed defensive coordinator in the NFL, Gus Bradley. Yeah, he was the guy that, you know, was the architect of the Legion of Boom up in Seattle with Pete Carroll, has done some things with the Raiders since then and has moved on to different places. But Carter Bradley, you know, no slouch, 26 to 36, a touchdown. You know, he did have that pick on John Vons, but I thought he really responded, you know, very well in a game where your first drive, you get a turnover. It's either, you know, sink or swim at that point. Carter Bradley really came out and made some nice plays. We talked about Jalen Wayne, you know, the receiver, 7 catches, 76 yards, really made plays, but mental mistakes. That was the key from it. I saw Dorian's quote in the press conference. He said, we shot ourselves in the foot a lot. We had to kind of dig ourselves out of the hole. We were able to make it happen. Madman, is the defense, because we've been praising the front four, you know, front seven for that matter, the first 2 weeks, we had an off game. Do you think this is just kind of a one-off, or do you think this is an ongoing problem that could potentially plague the Bruins moving forward?
Well, I hope it's not the latter, but it is a little bit concerning that a team from the Sun Belt could really move around this line to the extent that they did. And when you start looking ahead of the schedule, and I'm sure we'll get there, this schedule now is shaping up after Colorado of having 3 consecutive very tough games. And so we have to be ready there. And I wonder a little bit if between the Murphy twins and Carl Jones and Latu, they aren't thinking of themselves too much as specialists. You know, we've praised them a lot in pass rush and second and long, third and long, obvious passing situations to get to the quarterback. But when you're talking about containment, gap integrity, being able to stop the run, being able to sort of read and react to misdirections at the offensive level, that's what a complete front four and front seven is. And so I'm hoping that this is a teachable moment for that group to say, look, pass rush is excellent, but that's only one dimension to be a great defensive lineman. And we need to sort of focus on these other things. Because it just felt like, you know, I was stunned to see our defensive line just get moved and manhandled. And I know, Will, you mentioned the mental mistakes, and my goodness, those three were huge. But we were also the beneficiaries of some mistakes that South Alabama had. You know, we talked about that John Vaughn's very sort of, you know, that was almost sort of a gift interception because Crowley just locked into the receiver on that bubble screen. And then Webb had a fumble there, Will, in the second half of that game at the UCLA 35. They had the first down, and they were sort of moving the ball at will. And so for me, the turnovers almost kind of canceled each other out. Obviously, in number, it was 2-2, but also in terms of significance, because they were both sets of turnovers led to opponents' points. And, you know, I think South Alabama, when you talk about mental mistakes, I mean, we'd be hard to remiss that last play. I mean, my God, what were they thinking? Up 31-29, moving the ball, 4th-and-2, Will, at the UCLA 25, and the way they were moving the ball, and you mentioned Webb and the game that he had, just line up and go for it, or just kick the field goal. Because if you kick the field goal, you're up 5 with 3 minutes to go. UCLA's got to march it all the way. If they do, you still get the ball back with about a minute, 45 seconds, and all you need is a field goal to win. Or you just line up and have faith in your line that played so well to get it, and you have an opportunity to milk the clock and then either be up 5 or seal it with a touchdown with very little time left. So the fact that they chose going for a fake field goal when in reality that was the stronger unit the whole game, and then B, the play where they had the the holder become the quarterback. I know he was a quarterback in high school, but then have him roll right and then roll back left. I mean, we were really gifted that situation. Credit to us for capitalizing and winning the game, but Christmas certainly came early in September, Will, with how that final 3 minutes played out.
I want to be respectful when I say this, but that was, as a fan of football, I've watched 20-plus years of football. You have as well. That was among the worst calls I've ever seen in a game of football. Because even if you take the points field goal-wise, we were having trouble in the red zone all day.
I mean,
Nick Farmira, 4 field goals, you know, and we'll get to him later. You know, big redemption story for Farmira. But, my God, you either take the points or you go for it. And the way they went for it was one of the dumbest things I've ever seen on a football field at the Division I level. And sometimes it just comes down to, we talked about us shooting ourselves in the foot. From a coaching standpoint, that may have been the biggest shooting yourself in the foot moment I think I've ever seen as a fan. So very tough to watch if you're a fan of South Alabama. We were loving it as fans of UCLA. I think our text messages were, ha, just a million ha-has after one of another, because we're just like, I can't even believe what just happened. To put your faith for the game, essentially, on your backup quarterback, I think it was the backup quarterback. I don't know who it was. A guy that may have not taken a snap since high school. Are you kidding me? That is borderline idiotic, madman. And it was just crazy to watch that play out at the Rose Bowl to decide the game. We get the ball back and we made it happen. You know, we drove down the field and won the game, but man, that's how close we were to losing at home to a team from South Alabama. And I want to give them credit. I think this team, from what I saw, this could be an 8-9 win team, you know, in college football. I think they're going to make, you know, a better bowl game than I think a lot of people think. Herb Spreed actually put us on upset watch coming into the game because he's very high on South Alabama too. So this team is good, but we need to be better if we want to reach those heights. And I promise there are going to be some very good things we will be talking about in the podcast. We're going to be doing the 6-game balls. Madman's going to get 3. I'm going to get 3. But we have to address kind of the public figure of UCLA football, if you will. Troy Aikman comes out after the game, and he has some serious words. And to his credit, I was embarrassed by the fan total at the Rose Bowl as somebody that covers UCLA. I'm sure you were as well. This is a – we were waiting, and our defense was for a long time, was school hasn't started yet. We want to get fans out there. It's going to happen. That was the second smallest game in the history of the Rose Bowl, only second to the first game of the season. So it has not been going well there. And then Troy Aikman had this tweet, and I'm going to read it verbatim for our audience. This is an embarrassment, but we couldn't fill the Rose Bowl in 1988 when we were the number one team in the country. Anyone else at UCLA think it's time for an on-campus 30,000-seat stadium? Of course. If we can't play better than we did today, it would be a half-empty two. So I'm going to give you a two-part question for you, Madman. Give me your just general thoughts on Aikman kind of coming out of the woodworks, taking a shot, I think, at the coaching staff as well for UCLA. And second, is there any chance we could potentially get a stadium in Westwood? I love playing at the Rose Bowl. It is one of the most iconic stadiums in the world. But how cool would it be for you and I, two people that live on the west side of Los Angeles, to make a 10-minute drive to the stadium?
Well, Will, you know, I want to come out and just sort of provide some context in, you know, the great Troy Aikman, obviously one of the greatest players in UCLA history. And certainly when you combine college and pro, unquestionably the greatest UCLA Bruin football player of all time. I also want to state what a proud Bruin he is and how instrumental Troy has been with the Wasserman family in terms of investment in the football program, investment in the facilities, as well as how instrumental a role he played in getting Chip Kelly to come to UCLA 5-6 years ago now. And so Troy is someone who bleeds baby blue and gold. And so for him to come out and say this, I think in the society and the culture and the fandom we live in, anything that we don't agree with, we just call that person a hater or someone who's negative and all of those things. This is coming from a place of deep love and affection for this program. And there's a lot of truth to it, Will. It's very sad to see the Rose Bowl. When you look at the first three games of this season, we've had a combined 90,000 in attendance. And I promise you, Will, there weren't 90,000 butts in those seats, okay? This was 90,000 over three games where you're counting the number of individuals that have bought season tickets in addition to non-season ticket holders that are attending the game. The Rose Bowl has been at best a quarter full, and that's after AD Martin Jarman has sectioned off 10 areas on each side of the Rose Bowl with the UCLA, the four letters, and the two Jordan brand logos accompanying those four letters on each side. That's 10 sections total. And to see this be the case is very sad for me as a Bruin alum and as someone who cares very deeply about the program. And I think that, it's the product on the field and where we've had a number of losing seasons. I think, B, a lot of it has to do with Chip Kelly's sort of personality and opinion of the media in terms of how much effort he needs to put in from a public relations perspective and a relationship building perspective with the media. And as a result of that, I think the visibility of the program, the hype around the program, even when we get great players, great transfers, suffers. I mean, we had an example of that with this whole transfer U situation this week on social media, Will, where UCLA came out and called itself Transfer U. Chip comes out and says, no, that was a mistake. That needs to be put down. It took a while for it to be put down. But then someone like Elaine Kiffin at Ole Miss says, hey, if you don't want that title, we'll gladly take it. And they adopted it and they proclaimed that they were truly Transfer U because they had 21 transfers since 2020 and UCLA only had 20. And you're seeing coaches really understanding the power of social media, the power of organic brand building, and Chip just doesn't believe in that. And three, Will, I think that, you know, as a fan base, as members of the alumni, we really need to decide how much of the football program is central to connection with the university, to school spirit and pride, and to the identity of the university. And I think all three of those things are contributing to this low attendance, and it makes me very sad. And part B of your question, how exciting would it be to see an on-campus stadium? I think the university that got this right was Stanford. Stanford understood that outside of a USC, there really isn't a football brand on the West Coast that can consistently support 70, 80, 90,000. That the vast majority of West Coast brands are probably in that 35 to 45,000 range. And Stanford built a beautiful on-campus stadium that seats about 48 to 50,000. And it fits their needs and it fits their purposes. And I think Troy understands that, truth be told, the school that UCLA really looks at as, you know, a blueprint. It's not SC. It's not anyone else in terms of from a rivalry perspective. It really is Stanford. And can UCLA, Drake Stadium is beautiful. It's historic. A lot of track and field, a lot of other sports are there. Can we sort of make that work? I think it's going to be challenging with parking. I think it's going to be challenging with neighborhood associations. You're talking about the most preeminent neighborhoods like Bel Air and Westwood, and having to deal with the traffic associated with that, of having to park and so the operations and logistics. But I think it's worth looking into. And if it's not on campus, hey, is it where the Galaxy used to play down in Carson, you know, where the Chargers first met, where that's still a little bit further away, but it's a smaller stadium. It's easier to get in and out of, and you can do all kinds of fun things then in terms of extracurriculars. Tailgating can become this sort of carnival-like atmosphere. You can do a lot more things in terms of halftime shows. And can you build a base there? Because there's still so many Bruin alums in the Manhattan Beach, Hermosa Beach area. So there's a lot of different solutions that we can bring to the table here to really get the energy back into UCLA football.
Couldn't agree more, and a phenomenal answer at that. And I do want to say we have always been a pro Chip podcast. We've thought he's been the guy from the beginning. We defended him coming into last season, delivered us an 8-4 year. These three games to start this year is probably the first time I've ever questioned if he's the right guy for the job. And I mean that from a place of sincerity, of somebody that obviously cares deeply about UCLA football. No, I'm not an alum, but I put time and effort each and every week to bring to the Bruin.
You're an honorary alum, Will. There's no question about that.
Well, man, I can't say how much I appreciate that. But the thing is you have to have one or two things. You have to be able to excite the fan base, you know, maybe without the results. And I look at a perfect example of this. Jimbo Fisher, right, down at Texas A&M, really has not done a lot for Texas A&M. I would say they have underperformed under his tenure. They just lost to Appalachian State. I think they squeaked out a win against Miami this past weekend. But what he has done is he's got these recruiting classes coming in, and he's got the fan base is excited about this guy. Like, he is still bleeding in excitement. He's giving off great quotes. He's media friendly. He's media savvy. So you may not have the winning, but you have the excitement. And what Chip, I think, had in Oregon was he had the winning, but without the excitement. You got to have one or the other. And the wins, yes, we're 3-0, but man, they've been ugly as hell, to say the least. I mean, we're down 17-7 to Bowling Green. We have to go pretty much 70 yards down the field just to beat South Alabama. Oh, yeah, it's because they tried a fake field goal where they could have probably beaten us in the first place. So I like Chip. I want this to work. I've always thought of him as, you know, kind of the father of the spread offense in a lot of ways when it comes to college football. But at some point, we need to just balance out the results. And, you know, who knows? If we beat Washington in a couple weeks, maybe we beat Utah if we get a, you know, on a lucky day. We're 6-0. I'm changing my stance because I think this is the right way. But, man, through 3 weeks, program morale, it could not be lower right now for UCLA, for a team that we really were excited about coming into this year. So we'll keep an eye out on that for Chip. But we do want to get to some positives, Madman.
Just say one thing there, and then we'll certainly get to the positives.
Please do.
One is, I think for Chip, there also needs to be a little bit of a mindset shift, right? You mentioned Oregon. Chip was the same guy at Oregon as he is here. But how did he get the excitement? He got the excitement because he had the Nike ecosystem. That Phil Knight was essentially his recruiting coordinator. and provided the great Nike facilities, provided the flashy Nike uniforms. And that's what was enabling Chip to be able to sell that program without having to do it directly. And then when you look at even LA luminaries in sports, one of the first that comes to mind is Jerry Buss. What did Jerry Buss do for the Lakers? He said, I want to turn this into an event. I want to turn it into a show. I want to turn it like a Broadway theater. And that's where Showtime was born. And the band would come. And the Laker girls were really modeled after the USC song girls because he wanted to bring that element of theater and excitement. Will, one example for us. I think the number one piece of social media content on Twitter and LAFB over the last several months was the USC football entrance. You know, that has sort of caught fire, our video of that, of their game last night. And this is certainly a UCLA show, but it certainly speaks to how folks want to be connected to the program. They love the entrance. They want to be entertained. They want it to be a show as well. They want the uniforms. They want to be able to touch and feel their athletes and their program and have that connection. And that's something that UCLA and the comms department and Martin Jarman really needs to think about, that this is a relationship-oriented endeavor. That's what sports is. We cannot always be so transactional. And so hopefully this is now an opportunity. It's a teachable moment because UCLA has the best of everything in terms of alumni, facilities, passion, school spirit. Let's tap into that and really show the city and show the country that UCLA's fan base is just as passionate as anybody else's.
And couldn't agree more. And Chip was able to get away with it. You mentioned, you know, the Nike coolness. They also took the baton from SC at the end of the 2000s and really ran with it. They were kicking ass. They were taking names. You know, they played for some national championships. They almost won them. We're in the Rose Bowl about every other year. That's what it takes. You know, you have to either be a winner or excite. Chip had both of those at the same time. We need to get at least one of those moving forward, and I just haven't seen it thus far. So for my kind of mojo, I need a little bit more from Chip and the coaching staff. But this is where the positivity comes in. It was a win. We're 3-0. You know, you can only play the team in front of you. And, you know, 3-0 is 3-0. We haven't lost yet. We'll take what we can get out of this. Game balls. This is one of my favorite segments we have with the Bruin Bible. And I'm going to give the first one to Madman because he, I think, spent more in gas money this weekend probably than anybody in Los Angeles for him driving to the Rose Bowl, then to the Coliseum, and had to take care of his buddy at his place, you know, driving him around too, man. So first game ball goes to you, Madman. Who are you? Who is the Bruin you were most excited about from Saturday's game?
Well, Thriller, there's a few, but I'm going to start with probably the only guy on defense that, you know, sort of warrants the game ball. We've mentioned him earlier. John Vaughns was absolutely terrific. The interception, he was deflecting passes from Crowley. He was doing really a great job in sort of a hybrid secondary and linebacker type of role to really help spark this UCLA defense. So it was great to see him play so well. Another name on that defense that we can sort of rely on moving forward going into conference season, and just so proud about the way he played and competed. So I want to start with JJV,
man. And it's been such a fun ride to watch this guy develop. Ken Norton has taken to this guy since he's come to UCLA. All the practice videos that I've been able to see and, you know, the reporters that have been there, your Mike Regalados, your Sam Connan, their view of the practice field is oftentimes skewed. They have to stand in one area, but the one area they are in front of is the linebacking drills and what they do there. And John Vaughns has been first in the line going through these tackling drills. Norton's getting up, patting him on the back, loving that connection there. And it's clear that he's taken his game to another level with Ken Norton Jr., the legend for UCLA, the All-American for UCLA, now coaching back his alma mater. 6 solo tackles, 7 total tackles, the interception, pass batted down. And it's just so nice when you compare this guy. You know, Mwasau had 10 total tackles, did miss on that sack a little bit. But if we can get the Mwasau we saw in the first two games, pair it with the Vons. We saw this last game. That's a fearsome linebacking duo, man. And I'm really excited to kind of see how these guys go further. Also, just a world-class Bruin, too. I mean, he's a baseball player on top of this, too. You know, probably one of the first to do that since the likes of Jackie Robinson did that back for UCLA. You know, his brother, he comes from a lineage of college football players. Tyler Vons, receiver that was, you know, at USC, played for, you know, the Indianapolis Colts as of late. That's his brother. You know, he's got family members that make things happen out on the football field in different areas. So John Vons is an excellent start to this pick. I thought you were going to go with somebody else, but if I may, Madman, I kind of got to toot my own horn on this one.
That's why I didn't go with it, Will. I wanted you to toot your own horn. That's exactly right.
We came in here, and like to a T, we're like, if Jake Bobo plays a big game, and this is you and I both, if Jake Bobo plays a big game, we're going to be, you know, we're going to come away with a win. And we said, what was it, 5 catches for 80 yards or something like that?
Yep.
5 catches, 89 yards, and a touchdown. And the thing with Bobo, I tweeted this out, he has 11 catches through 3 games. Probably would have been more if the, you know, the South Alabama game wasn't a blowout. You know, second half of, you know, Bowling Green, we were more running the ball with Charbonnet and things like that. But 9 of those 11 catches, I would bet, are huge third down conversions, momentum shifts for UCLA. And it's sometimes it's not quantity, but it's the quality of catches this guy is providing to UCLA. That 34-yarder on third down that he connected with when it looked very bleak at the Rose Bowl. I remember you texting me going, the crowd is dead right now. Like, if they were to punt the football, it may be over. And then Bobo comes up with that, also catches that 9-yarder in the red zone on a third down, you know, kind of adding to the big catch mojo with Mr. Jake Bobo. I mean, this guy, he's just making plays all over the field. And you could see it. The route running is so crisp. Big body frame, 6'5". It was just a matter of time. And I think it took a little bit of time for DTR to really kind of develop some chemistry with a guy like Jake Bobo. But, man, if this is a consistent thing we're seeing from Bobo, we've got a second-team All-Pac-12 receiver on our hands with Bobo. What do you think about that?
Thriller, I couldn't agree more. And that's why I wanted that game ball for you because we were talking about this so much. A, I completely agree. I think this offense will only go as far as Jake Bobo can be wide receiver one. We love Kaz Allen in terms of his ability to catch the ball and do a lot of different things. But to me, Jake Bobo has to be wide receiver one for this offense and this team to reach its potential that we know it has. Will, I cannot – he had the 5 catches for 89 yards. They're always big catches with Bobo. I thought his touchdown was so dramatic and, you know, the catch radius, he elevated in the air and really brought life back. I can't understate the importance of that 34-yard catch on 3rd and 9. You know, DTR – that sequence, DTR sort of checked down to Charbonnet for a gain of 1. He threw it at the feet of TMA. The offense looked so discombobulated. He didn't know where to go with it. If this season ends up becoming at or close to what we believe it can be, that catch, Will, was the turning point of this season. Because if that play does not happen, Bobo doesn't come down with that catch. I think there was some sense, even in the press box, there were some murmurs and whispers that Chip might have had to make a quarterback change on the very next drive. It was that bleak at 17-6 because at that point the offense wasn't moving the ball and the defense wasn't stopping South Alabama either. There was really nothing you could hang your hat on, and the energy in the crowd was flat. So you had nothing. You didn't have energy. You didn't have either unit going together. And Bobo catching that ball signified, yes, this is the guy that we know he is. He showed us those flashes. He set the tone in the third quarter with that great play action catch as well. And just every ball he caught 4 other passes after that 34-yarder. Couldn't agree more with you, Will. We need him to be the receptions leader, the yards leader, and the touchdown leader through the air for this offense to go where it can. And I totally believe he can be. And I think all Pac-12 second team is firmly in the cards.
And what I would say with Bobo too is, you know, I think a lot of the casual observers would say the Carl Jones play, you know, stopping them and forcing the turnover. To me, that was more of just an implosion on South Alabama. Yeah. Somebody was going to make a play, and all credit to Carl Jones for making it. I can't even rule that more of a success in our favor just for how poorly that was constructed on their part. So to this point, through three games, the Bobo catch is the biggest play.
No question. No question.
You know, and just hearing, you know, what that was talked about in the press box, that's just more validating of a fact for me now that Bobo was able to do that. All right. First game ball in for each of us. Second one on the way to Madman. Who's your second game ball going to, brother?
Second guy, Thriller. I'm going to stay in the receiving room. And it's a guy that we have sort of been also waiting for over the years, a guy who's been in this program now a couple of years, and that's Logan Loya. If Jake Bobo made the biggest catch of the game, and we certainly agree, Logan Loya might have made the second biggest catch in the game. And that second biggest catch in the game, Will, there were two of them, but there was actually one, the setup, not the touchdown, but that long 26-yard reception, last play of the third quarter. You know, the situation, UCLA was down 31-23. The Keegan Jones muff on that option had just happened. South Alabama just punched it in. You know, they were down 23-17, now 14 consecutive points, we're down 8, and now that sense of anxiety of where it was at 17-6 kind of came back to fruition. And again, it was third down, and Logan Loya comes through in the clutch with this beautiful crossing route for the 26 yards, and it was really that sort of jump-started that possession, and then he followed it up with that fourth down, you know, inside the South Alabama 10-yard line. It was really fourth and four from the six, I want to say. And Logan Loya gives a great move to the outside, cuts back in. It was almost Cooper Kupp-like feet. You know, it was a Cooper Kupp-like route. You know, he faked to the outside, curled back in, made a little bit of a spin to get open. High point of that ball, walked into the end zone. Logan Loya arrived, and it was so refreshing that he has now joined this party, because I think the combination of his speed, you know, as being an additional dimension to this receiving room, but also now playing a role, I think, in the return game, and the fact that we have found him to be the punt returner and he's kind of taken it over from Bobo, I think is going to be critical moving forward. And it's also very interesting that DTR now 6 touchdown passes on the year to 6 different receivers. And so that is a huge statement there. Logan Loya, welcome to the party, pal, as Bruce Willis would say in Die Hard. And so thrilled to give him the game ball number 2.
And it's just a guy that we've had in our system for what feels like a long time. We've been waiting and waiting. And, you know, for his first 2 years, he came in as a 4-star recruit from high school. 3 catches in his first 2 seasons. Not a lot. I'm on the sidelines pregame for the first game. He's a healthy scratch, or, you know, just, you know, as close as a healthy scratch as you can be as he's playing the next week. And, you know, Mike Regalado and I are talking. We're going, ah, man, like Loya, like we're rooting for this guy. We want to see it happen for him this year. And then he comes out and makes these big plays, 3 catches, 37 yards, did his job, caught the second biggest ball of the game. This is the trajectory you want to see from Loya, because I think if he can reach that ceiling of that 4-star recruit, this guy could be one of the best slot receivers, not only in the Pac-12, on the West Coast in general. So a lot to be excited about with that Loya performance. He's already more than doubled his career catches, you know, coming in this year. He's got 6 of them now this season for 67 yards, averaging over 10 yards a catch. So Loya, a name to watch out for. Madman, I'm looking at my draft board right now. There's like a few ways we can go here, you know, but I'm going to kind of shock you a little bit.
Okay.
I think and it's not going to be to one particular player. I'm going to go with the offensive line unit, because I thought they did a better job than normal. You know, that Bowling Green game, you look at the stats, they allowed 2 sacks and 5 hurries for a quarterback that's Dorian Thompson-Robinson. Like, this guy can move clearly. So horrendous game from the offensive line, was a huge concern. It has tangibly improved enough where they had no sacks allowed yesterday and just 1 hurry. So still a lot of question marks on that end, but this is the rate we needed them to kind of climb up a little bit. So when you get to conference play, you can just be competent, right? So not flashy, not, you know, pancake blocks a la Trent Williams out there, but they're doing their job. And it's improved under Tim Drevno, the first year offensive line coach. They lost like one of the best offensive line coaches in the country in Justin Fry, you know, who went to Ohio State. You know, this is a guy that school doesn't hire average coaches. They take the best of the best, especially the rate they're competing at right now. So I, you know, nothing flashy, you know, they just kept a clean stat sheet. And I think that should be respected for how we were speaking to them on week one. Is that a fair assessment, Madman?
No doubt, Will. No doubt. And I think that the other key point to emphasize is two different rushers for UCLA had over 12 carries, and both of them had over 60 yards in terms of Charbonnet as well as Keegan Jones. And Charbonnet had 6 yards per carry. Keegan Jones was at 4.6 yards per carry. And the Keegan Jones 4.6 yards per carry was hit because he dropped that option play. So Keegan Jones was certainly above five and a half as well. And so those are two very different running styles as well. And so the fact that they were able to stay consistent in terms of opening up opportunities for those two unique runners to be getting 5 to 6 yards a carry over the course cumulatively of 26 carries, I completely agree with you. And it's really important that we highlight their significance because they were criticized the first couple of weeks. And so kudos to them for really stepping up. And we're going to need more of that. We're going to need more of that, especially as we start playing some of these conference foes, in particularly 2 weeks from now and beyond.
And like I said, not flashy, but you got to appreciate progress. And they've clearly made little bit of a jump since week one. And I think it's deserved that they get talked about. So I'm happy about that. Madman, you're down to your final game ball. And, you know, there's a lot of guys I'm still looking at that could be, you know, very valuable, you know, players to pick here. Where are you going with your final game ball, Madman?
Thriller, you're so right. I could take the cheeky route and give a game ball to Major Applewhite for that last call, you know, or I could take kind of a non-traditional route, pick another receiver because, you know, he was peppering around. But I'm going to take the square kind of traditional route and the guy who actually won the football game on the final play, and that is kicker Nicholas Barmira. And 4 for 4, you mentioned it, Will. And, you know, especially another redemption story, given that he was 1 for 3 in the opener and part of the litany of mistakes that the special teams made in the opener against Bowling Green, to come back, be clean sheet 4 for 4. And it wasn't like those field goals were add-ons. We literally needed every single point that Nicholas Barmira provided to us to get the victory. And while some may say none of those kicks were really beyond 45 yards and they weren't really long, they were standard kicks. Look, go back to that Alabama-Texas game last week. Texas shanked a 19-yard field goal that probably would have been the difference in the game at the end of the first half and when they ultimately fell short by 1 point. So all of these points matter. All of this execution matters. Yes, it was a 24-yard field goal. That's a bit closer than traditional field goals. But with the pressure of that game down to as a 16-point favorite at home, knowing that this game can be salvaged by you and by you alone, for him not to overcompensate and push it to the right or hook it to the left and trust his preparation and trust the ability that we know he has to go 4 for 4, knock that in. Nicholas Barmira, the hero of the game, and someone we're going to need to be at an all Pac-12 first team performance or a second team performance, because this team is going to need to rely on some key field goals down the stretch of some of these games as well. So Nicholas Barmira, kudos to you for winning the game for us so we can bitch and complain about a 3-0 team rather than the sky falling 2-1.
Man, yeah, and just the improvement. You know, he missed a couple chip shots in the opener, had his punt blocked, and we're looking at each other. This is, you know, in tandem with the Bobo muff punts and near muff punts. We're going special teams is an issue, you know, from week one. And to our credit, you know, Mira, just like the offensive line, really – has improved week by week. We got to keep that rolling. Barmira did a great job. His lone punt of the day went 46 yards. That's NFL numbers right there. So got to give credit where it's due. Nicholas Barmira was perfect on the day from a special team standpoint. Last guy we can go to. And I think it's, you know, there's different guys. I loved Cam Brown got back in the lineup. He got a touchdown, 2 catches, 19 yards. Carl Jones Jr., you know, we talked about, was more on South Alabama. He still made an incredible play. Well, I got to go with the quarterback, man. DTR, you know, 20 of 30 through the air. That's a 66% completion rate, 263 yards, 3 touchdowns, no turnovers. And he did his job. You know, when it came down to the end, he drove us the length of the field, put us in position to win, had some key touchdown passes there. You know, it wasn't looking good early in the first half, but he really kind of turned it around. I thought DTR really played well. And, you know, I do think there's a level where Garbers can potentially come in and be maybe make the offense hum at a higher level just because of his downfield threat and what he can provide there. But the players clearly respond to a guy like DTR. He's the leader of the team, goes out there, makes plays, 7 carries for 27 yards. And less of those, you know, end zone trots from our guy Garbers, Lamar Garbers, or, you know, Ethan Tebow, you know, is a faction of what actually happened. I think, you know, DTR can provide different angles that, you know, no other quarterback in the quarterback room can provide. So DTR got it done, and we got to give credit where it's due. So he did a hell of a job. That concludes the game ball segment and the Bruin Bible as a whole. We're going to have content coming to you this week. We have reached Pac-12 play, Madman. So expect us to get somebody on from the Colorado, you know, reportings. Boy, that's going to be a bleak outlook for them. You know, they've been outscored. I think it's 180-30 in their first 3 games. It has not been pretty for our guy, Carl Durrell. We wish him nothing but the best. We're going to have to take advantage of him out on next Saturday. But Carl Durrell, a Bruin, we got to wish him luck there. Madman, any things you want to sign off with?
Thriller, no, completely agree with you. And I'm really happy you gave DTR the game ball. Again, it's never easy in any situation to be down and to have to come back on a game-winning drive. And, you know, I think all we're looking from DTR moving forward is a little bit more consistency play to play. But no one has ever questioned his prodigious talent. The ceiling is through the roof for him. And just the spectacular plays that he's capable of making, you can see defenses fear him. And so in DTR, we trust moving forward. And again, I think the beauty here of the way this schedule is breaking, you mentioned it, we got Colorado next week. This is one final, quote-unquote, college preseason game for UCLA to get to 4-0. You mentioned it, Will. We love Carl Durrell, a great Bruin receiver on the 85 Rose Bowl team, former coach. You know, they're struggling. You talked about 128-30. They've been outscored as an 0-3 team. I think success for Carl Durrell right now is that he lasted longer than Herm Edwards. You know, we got to take the wins where we can get them. And, you know, so I think he's in a really tough spot. Colorado's really struggling. That should be a win and should be a comfortable one where we sort of work these things out. And then there is a trilogy ahead where Washington, I think, showed us and the country what they're capable of. 3 consecutive ranked opponents, Thriller. Washington, Utah, Oregon. This Bruin team that we fully expect to be 4-0. We will find out everything we need to find out in those subsequent 3 weeks. Cannot wait, and cannot wait to see this team galvanize and step it up as the level of competition increases. Because at 4-0, everything is there to be played. 8 more games with all of the championships and all of the bowl game possibilities, and everything still in front of this team. So we're just getting started with this Bruin season.
So much to play for. We're just getting started. Bruin Bible, we are a